for what he's done for them. And again, we got some passages to look at. If you want chapter 20, you can kind of flip through and follow through as we go through it here. Verse 6, he says, O Lord, our God of heaven, God of our fathers, are you not God in heaven? And he puts this in a way of almost like a negative question type thing. Are you not God in heaven? Do you not rule over all the kingdoms of the nations? In your hands, is there not power and might? So no one's able to stand against you? Well, what's the obvious answer to that? I mean, yes, you are the God in heaven. You do have all the power. You do rule over the nations, and there's no one that can stand against you. It's already been just demonstrated several times this quarter. We've looked at other battles here. So that's the way Jehoshaphat starts out, praising God, recognizing who he is, the power he has, and what he can do for them. Then he tells about what God's done for them in driving the inhabitants out. And I go back to what we read in Acts 13 a few minutes ago. He had driven them out. They had built a sanctuary there, that big temple that David had gathered all the material for and Solomon had built for them there. And he said, if disaster comes against us, some kind of judgment, sword, pestilence, anything, we're going to stand before this temple here because that's where your presence is. We'll come before you and we're going to cry out to you and you will hear us and you will save us. So God, Jehoshaphat just pouring out his heart to God here. And a point that even ties it back, the fact that it is, Edom we're talking about here is, Jehoshaphat points out that when the Israelites came up after wandering in the wilderness and going to come up and go to the east side of the Jordan and start taking the land of Canaan, that Edom would let them pass through their land. Remember that way back in the history there. And God made them go around. And that comes back up in his prayer here about them not letting come through. That's back in Numbers chapter 20. He said, we did that because they were brethren. But now the brethren are coming to fight against them. All these that are coming here are related to them. But now they come up here and they're going to try to throw us out of this land that you gave us. You gave us the land. You ran the people out. They were here. The nations out. You gave us this land. And now they're coming up here to try to throw us out. Verse 12, O Lord, O our God, will you not judge them? We have no power against this great multitude that's coming against us. We don't know what to do, but our eyes have turned to you. We can't beat them, so we're asking for your help. Then God answers his prayer. Messenger stands up, and he says, Listen, you people of Judah, people of Jerusalem and Jehoshaphat. Here's what God says. Don't be afraid. Don't be dismayed because of this great multitude. The battle's not yours, but it's God's. And how would you feel about that? Massive multitudes coming, and you can't think about it. The way you can physically beat them, pour out your heart to God. This messenger says, don't worry about it. God's got this. He's going to take care of it. And what's coming up in the next few verses is almost amazing. If you thought, I'm sure you've read it, the way he does it. Look what he tells them. First he says, don't be afraid. God's going to take care of it. Tomorrow you'll go down and you're going to meet this army that's coming. But you're not going to fight. Go there and stand still. And watch what God's going to do for you. Don't be afraid. Tomorrow go out against them. God's going with you. They give their thanks for it. They get up next morning and they go out. He says, go out here and stand and watch. Believe in the Lord God. You'll be established. Believe his prophets. And you shall prosper. No swords. No spears. We're not going out there to fight them. But here, watch God take care of them. He's going to do it. Now, this little phrase, I'm going to kind of sidetrack here just one minute. Look at this phrase right here. Believe in the Lord your God. Same concept, of course, is throughout the Bible, even New Testament for us today. Here's my question. Is there any difference in this statement now, believe in the Lord your God, and in this statement? I'm going to get kind of nitpicky here, but I just want to think about it. I'd ask Scott to think about this a little bit and see if he had a comment or two he could make for us here. And so Scott's great or something, but anyhow. So I'm going to ask Scott what he had come up with or anything. But, and maybe there's no difference, okay, in the two, but go ahead. Exodus chapter 8 is where Scott's going here. Okay, good. I know some of y'all kind of hurt Scott, but the idea that I'm trying to get to here is I can believe, and he said the magicians in Egypt, the plagues, they believed God. They believed God did that. But they didn't believe in God. Okay. So I can believe what God says. And one thing I was reading on this, use Santa Claus as their illustration this guy did to kind of make the point. Yeah. I see Santa Claus at the store and he said, it's raining outside and I'm going to believe him. Yeah, it's raining outside. Well, not because of who he is, but because I think, oh God, I know it's raining outside or whatever. But if you really believe in Santa Claus, then anything Santa Claus said, of course you're going to do it. And that's kind of a crude illustration, I know, but that's the way this guy tried to illustrate it. Believing in God, my total trust, my total faith in God versus believing some statement that he might say that I might agree with or believe because of that. So anyhow, maybe that's too much on that, but that point. But he told them, said, believe in God. Put your faith in him. Total trust in him. If you went out there and faced a humongous army and you got no shields, no swords, no battles, you better have your faith there. So what happens in the battle? They go to battle, and it seems like the Ammonites and the Moabites kind of turn on those, on the Edomites, and destroy them, and then they turn around and start hassling each other and destroy each other. And so God, they just stand back and watch, and God intervenes, and God takes care of it, and they're all destroyed. Then they go out to get and there's just this field full of bodies out there. And you notice how long it takes them? They take the spoils of the battle. See how long it took them to take out the spoils? 3 days. 3 days they were out there getting the spoils of the battle. And they didn't do anything. They didn't fight in a bit. God took care of that. They just went out there and gathered up the reaping from it there. And then these verses kind of sum up Jehoshaphat's life. Verse 32. He walked in the ways of his father Asa, which we know was a good king for 41 years. Did not turn aside from it. He did what was right in the sight of God. And that's Jehoshaphat's life. But verse 33, the very next verse. This is going to be important as we go forward. Jehoshaphat prepared his heart. He sought after God. He tried to lead the people that way. Verse 33. The high place was not taken down. The people had not directed their hearts back to God. The people had not. So when Jehoshaphat's son takes over here just very shortly and takes off beyond the Baal worships and leaves God, now you see why. Well, their hearts weren't right. Their hearts weren't ready for it. Jehoshaphat was good. He tried to lead the people right. The people did not prepare their hearts for that. Okay, that's kind of the narrative, not a lot this morning, battle. But I want to talk about this preparing heart for a minute, because you got a contrast here with Jehoshaphat. He did prepare his heart, and the people who did not. And if you look on into the next lesson or two, with their hearts not prepared, it's so easy for them to slip back away and be gone. So, these good things about Jehoshaphat. Very few of us decide, I'm going to do evil. I'm going out tomorrow and I'm going to do that. My taxes are coming up. I know I'm going to cheat. I'm going to change 3 or 4 lives. Most of us don't decide I'm going to do something wrong. The question is, have we really prepared to do right? Have we decided that I'm going to always do what's right? Or we're just kind of floating in the middle somewhere. That's kind of what we'll talk about here in a minute. To prepare. What do you mean to prepare? The definition is to, like a deliberate effort. A deliberate effort over an extended period of time. I'm going to prepare my heart. I'm going to make a definite, deliberate effort over a period of time to prepare my heart for that. The word prepare takes on some planning. I've got something I want to achieve out here. What am I going to achieve? I'm going to be obedient to God. I'm not going to do that. I've got a lot of preparing to do. I'm going to work toward that. Is it going to happen overnight? No. It's a constant thing I'm working toward, working toward. Preparing my heart. Preparing to achieve something that I'm trying to do out here. The same word's also translated fixed in some other places. Now we'll look at one of them here. You'll see. I achieve. This psalm, if you think back to when Saul is chasing David, David is in the back of the cave, Saul comes in to relieve himself, and David's men encourage him to go out and kill Saul. Well, he had the opportunity there. Okay. And we all know why he would not do it. David said over and over, I will not harm what? I will not harm the Lord's anointed. David says, my heart is fixed. My heart is fixed. He had his heart right there. I won't do this. And he had multiple opportunities we have recorded where he could have killed Saul and got him, stopped chasing him, he'd gone on been king. But no, he said, no, my heart is fixed. I have prepared my heart. Otherwise, you're in that cave, Saul comes in there, and your men are all encouraging you to kill him, or when the two of you go into the middle of their camp, I don't know if it's Joab with him, who it was, but he said, let me kill him with one thrust of the spear, and I'll drive him to the ground. It won't take two. No, David said no. He already prepared his heart not to do that. So something's fixed. My heart is fixed on doing what's right. No change. No variation. Firmly held. What's David going to do? I don't care how many times I got a chance to kill Saul. What am I going to do? I'm not going to do it. My heart's fixed. I prepared my heart. I will not hurt Saul. Why? Because of who he is. So when we prepare our heart, we fix our heart firmly that I'm going to do right. I'm going to do this. When this comes up, I'm going to do it. This is how I'm going to handle it. And we fail sometimes. We get our heart fixed. So we think about it before it happens. Before it happens. And we get our heart prepared to do what's right. I'm afraid too often I'm committed to that. Yeah, I'm going to do what's right. Yeah, that's my whole purpose in life. Serve God, do what's right. Sometimes it's not quite strong enough. Maybe too much of a surface layer type thing. I mean, really down, that preparing hadn't really happened like it ought to. So we succumb to temptation when it comes up. God needs to be prepared and involved in preparing my hearts. Psalms 10, verse 17. You have heard the desire of the humble. You will prepare the heart. God's involved in preparing my heart to serve him. And humility is involved in it. Trust. Humility. How do I approach God when I start preparing my heart? With that humble attitude of servitude to him and doing what he wants done. Samuel said to him, if you return to the Lord with all your hearts, prepare your hearts for the Lord. Serve him. So there's a preparation that comes into it. The Living Bible, another translation, translates this verse here in 1 Samuel as determined to obey. Determined. Preparing your heart, I am determined I'm going to do what's right. And one more point about this is preparing my heart. Not a group effort. If each one of us gets our hearts right, then the group will have a heart right. But just because I'm part of the group doesn't make my heart right. Okay? Preparing my heart. We used this slide before. It was talking about seek God and you'll find him. The ways we can seek God. I went back and highlighted this word prayer because I am more and more and more convinced that that's the key. That's the key to preparing my heart. That's the key to seeking God. I mean, if I start abandoning my prayer life, and this is something I deal with, some of you may too, if I start abandoning that, if I don't put emphasis into it that I need to, then that's when you start drifting with that. So, what do we get out of it? Prepare our hearts, serve him loyally, behave courageously, don't be afraid, God's going to handle the battle. And believe in the Lord God, will be established. That summarizes what I see in this chapter. All right, thoughts from somebody else? Quiet crew today. Anybody else?
Now,
In this case, the men had to take more faith because they weren't going out there with a bunch of shields and spears and swords, and they're going to win this battle because of who we are. They went out there to watch God do it, and they were singing praises to Him. Instead of fighting, He took care of it. Now, to walk out there with no shield in the front of it, it would take more faith it would to have a shield and a spear. Alright, I think next time is 2 Kings 1 and 2. If I remember right, 2 Kings 1 and 2. Yeah. Thank you very much.